This is the Swedish Institute of International Affairs podcast Utblick Extra, which this time contains bonus materials from our ordinary podcast Utblick. This is a conversation with the researchers Sanna Salo from the Finnish Institute of International Affairs about traditional right-wing parties' choice to collaborate or not with more nationalist and radical right-wing parties. My name is Jonas Löwenberg. Enjoy.
My name is Sanna Salo, and I am an Academy of Finland postdoctoral fellow here at FIA, the Finnish Institute of International Affairs.
And what are you focused on in your research?
Well, in my research, I have been focusing on exactly the rise of the radical right in Western Europe. So I do sort of comparative Western European politics, and particularly the reactions of the mainstream parties to them. I have done the Nordic countries, I have been focusing on Sweden, and in my future project, I also plan to take Germany along, where the issue is really a hot topic right now, actually. Here at FIA, I also try to look at the more general trends of the EU's and European politics developments and some of the foreign policy themes as well, which FIA specializes in.
And Germany is going to be our example for this conversation. So the radical right is gaining power all over the world, really, or in Western democracies in Europe and other places. And more mainstream right-wing parties are confronted with a choice. Do they reject cooperation with radicals as a matter of principle, or do they collaborate with them to advance their agenda? What are your thoughts on this dilemma for mainstream right-wing parties?
Well, first of all, I think that it's correct to say that the role of the mainstream right is really pivotal in this regard. And we also know this from historical research that the center-right parties have been really crucial for upholding democracy, as they have been able to contain, if they are successful in containing these sort of more radical or even more right-wing elements within their own ranks, then that's good for democracy. But in case this happens, that radical right-wing parties arise, then it's indeed a very tough question for them, because they are the next ones, sort of the proximate parties in the left-right scale to these radical right-wing parties, and they then, of course, are confronted with the choice that you mentioned. They are the effective gatekeepers to power for the far right, both in terms of cooperation, but also they are the most likely maybe to adopt some of the far right's rhetoric. So it's a very tough dilemma, because they have a moral problem. I think quite many of these parties genuinely have a moral problem with cooperating with the far right, but at some point they also might notice that they cannot build majorities or right-wing majorities without these parties, and this is what constitutes the dilemma.
How has this played out in Germany then?
Well, Germany is of course a slightly different case. All the cases are different, and they all have their history and their political culture, so in some sense they are not fully comparable, but Germany is even more different in the sense that it has the collective memory in the society of the Nazi past. And for that reason, it has really been a stigma in Germany that any party to the right from the CDU, which is the mainstream conservative party, should arise. So it has been a bit of a shock to the German system that the AfD, the Alternative for Germany, has actually become successful, not successful yet in the sense that it would actually be sitting in governments either at the state or local level or at the federal level, but in the sense that it's actually polling quite well, some 20% in the federal polls and even over 30% in some eastern states. And we can see how difficult this is for the German mainstream, and for the German public in these really huge protests against the AfD. So in Germany, the civil society has even really mobilized against the AfD in recent months. But officially, the mainstream right has isolated the AfD behind this so-called firewall, something that we have seen across Western democracies, also in Sweden, for a very long time. So this is the official policy, that we will not cooperate and we will not tolerate the AfD. But Germany is a federal system, which something which we also know from other country cases, I think including Sweden, is that these kind of firewalls often start cracking at the local level or at the state level. And this is exactly what we are seeing also in Germany. So the CDU has in fact already been cooperating with the AfD in some eastern states, I think especially Thuringia, where the AfD is particularly strong in passing some legislation together. And especially in the time of Friedrich Merz, who is currently the leader of the CDU, who comes from the more conservative camp within the CDU. We have seen also some rhetorical approaching the AfD rhetorically, so adopting some of the more radical immigration rhetoric, for example, calling Ukrainian refugees welfare tourists and things like this. So officially, firewall, unofficially, actually some cracks in the firewall.
So how much is the situation affected by the character of extremism or nationalism practiced by the party that the mainstream party are supposed to or not supposed to collaborate with?
So I've been asking myself the same question, and I haven't thoroughly researched the AfD's policies or looked at their materials to actually make an assessment of how radical they are in comparison to, say, the Sweden Democrats or so. But this is certainly the perception that they are extremely radical. So I think it does play a role, but I also think that it's a very German way of reacting to this, to the rise of this party, to label it as extremist, and also try to formalize this label by introducing perhaps a legal ban, something that is now discussed in Germany. So the domestic intelligence service has been sort of chasing the AfD for years now, looking at its potentially extremist traits within the party. And there's a debate going on in whether the AfD should be banned altogether. And there's quite well-known Oxford political scientist Giovanni Capoccia, who has a long history of researching these issues. He has recently given an interview to the Spiegel, a large German newspaper, where he said that it's quite effective usually to ban these kinds of extremist parties when they are relatively small. But when a party becomes over 20%, maybe even 30%, we don't have really precedents of banning such parties. So there are really difficult principles at odds. Like, obviously, we have to safeguard liberal democracy, and this is what the Germans are trying to do with this legal, debating these legal bans, but we also have to respect democratic elections and their results. So it's not an easy trade-off, and I think this is what Germans are navigating at the moment.
The CDU has held a line against extremists at home in some way, as you're describing, even though you are mentioning a few cracks. But at the EU level, they have cooperated with Orbán's party Fidesz for a long time, and Fidesz has become more and more right-wing. How does this work?
So I don't know this debate exactly. I haven't researched the Euro parties, but my understanding is that when Fidesz started to radicalize more and more towards the late 2010s, it's the case that the EPP, the European People's Party, of which the CDU is part of,
it's a parliament, it's a group in parliament, we should say that.
Exactly. Yes. They changed their opinion of Orban and his party as Fidesz became more and more radical. And when it started to embrace this anti-EU national conservative rhetoric, and Hungary was increasingly seen as backsliding also in terms of rule of law, the Euro party EPP actually suspended Fidesz. And then when this continued, the infighting over Fidesz in the EPP, Fidesz then left the party. And I think actually a CDU politician who was then the group leader of the EPP, so Manfred Weber, was actually instrumental in sort of making Fidesz leave the EPP. So I think the CDU cooperated so long as the Fidesz wasn't so radical, but as it became radicalized, then this cooperation also became more difficult. Okay. This is my understanding of the events, but I haven't researched this in depth.
I just want to spell this out, really. Why does traditional right-wing parties collaborate with more extremists and nationalists? What do they have to gain?
So I think they collaborate when they observe that they can no longer form governing majorities with right-wing parties without including these parties. So this is what we've seen, for example, in Sweden. So for a very long time, the moderates swore that they would never cooperate with the Sweden Democrats, and yet they did so, or are doing so more or less, when they have realized that forming right-wing majorities and therefore making right-wing politics will be very difficult without including these parties. So I think generally speaking, once the radical right grows so big that it exceeds a certain threshold, say something like 20%, then it becomes quite difficult. And of course, there is this option of forming these gross bloc alliances, which have been quite common in some multi-party democracies. So there has been these grand coalitions of social democrats and conservative parties, and this has been completely normal. But it is also true that these are often ideologically kind of muddled coalitions who don't agree on much within themselves. So policymaking becomes a bit difficult. They can't get much done. And this can also work so that it only increases the popularity of the radical right because the mainstream parties seem quite incapable of getting anything done. And I think this type of reasoning was probably behind why in Finland, Kokoomus, the equivalent of moderates in Finland, decided to take the Finns party in this coalition government. They wanted to execute their right-wing policies without having, let's say, the social democrats in the government destroying their ideas of what they wanted to do. So this has to be the main reason.
Why should they not cooperate then?
Yeah, so the answer is also somewhat obvious. If the far-right parties or the radical right-wing parties are extremist national to the degree that we really don't want to see the kinds of politics that they advocate, we don't want to see them seen through, including them in coalition governments, it will increase the odds that they will actually influence what kind of policies come out of that government. So they will increase the odds of us seeing quite radical right-wing politics actually being executed. Quite often, though, in multi-party democracies, they have to, you know, they have to agree with their coalition partners. They have to moderate their stances. Say, for example, the Finns party. Actually, in the party's program, it says that they advocate Finland's exit from the EU. And now they are in government with Kokoomus, who is traditionally a very pro-European party. So obviously, they can't right now advocate the position that they want Finland to exit the EU. But it is somehow there. So it may also be that they can then moderate on some issues. But what I think is an even more likely outcome, a very dangerous one that sort of develops over time, is an overall legitimation and normalization of their type of policy positions, their type of rhetoric, and also some individuals. For example, in Finland, currently, the Speaker of the Parliament, Jussi Halla-aho, was not that long ago considered as a rather radical figure who has actually been also convicted for hate speech. And he's now the Speaker of Parliament. And I think it's suddenly quite normalized in the eyes of the Finnish public. So little by little, not only policy positions, but also some individuals who have actually engaged in rather, one might say, radical activities in their past become normalized. So this might, in the long term, especially if it happens sort of across Europe or across Western democracy, become a rather worrisome development.
You said earlier that the more traditional right-wing party acts as some kind of gatekeepers for letting in these extremists in the political normalized sphere. What are they giving up morally? Traditionally, at least from how I understand things, many of these parties that are right-wing but always been against hardline nationalists and so on. What are they giving up in principle?
It's a really fine line that they have to thread. We now, for example, saw when the Finnish Prime Minister Petteri Orpo visited the European Parliament last week, he got really lectured by the MEPs on including the Finns party in his government. And I guess it must have felt really bad because his party has indeed traditionally been pro-European and liberal. So I guess when they then cooperate with the radical right, it's all about pushing aside or trying to silence the most sort of radical traits of their cooperation partners, and so pushing differences in that sense aside and making trade-offs. So, you know, say we agree to some more stringent immigration policies, but you then don't speak ill of the EU or sort of portray yourselves as pro-European and so on. So it's a very difficult trade-off. And I think what this whole development has really also meant for the conservative parties is probably that different factions within those parties have drifted apart a bit. You can see this in, for example, in the Swedish People's Party in Finland, which is a liberal party, like an ultra-liberal party, for example, in social cultural issues such as immigration or minority rights. but it is now sitting in the same government with the Finns party. And I think for them, it has been really difficult. And some parts of the party really dislike it. So they have to like push the more liberal traits and people within themselves to the side for a while in order to be able to govern with the radical right. And it must be very difficult for some people within these parties.
Last question then. When we are through this super election year, both in Europe but all over the world, actually, do you think the politics will have moved to the right or more to the center again?
Yeah, so this is a good question. It's difficult to predict. If we think about the European Parliament, the polls are quite steadily looking at the polls. They are quite steadily showing that the right will gain. The ECR, the Conservatives, and the ID, the far-right nationalists, will gain. The question is, of course, what happens then? Like, will the center still hold in terms of them forming a grand coalition against especially ID, against the most radical right-wing alternative or the most radical right-wing group? And I would suspect that they will try to do that. But in the long run, even within the parliamentary term, it might also mean what I was describing before, that policymaking is actually quite dysfunctional and that they can't agree among themselves on anything. When it comes to the US, hard to say, hard to predict anything that will happen there. We now know that, you know, it looks quite likely that Donald Trump will win, and who knows what that will mean for the US, let alone for the world. So my guess would be that the centrists will try to sort of hold their line and bring their forces together in order to really isolate the most extremist part. But I think it's also likely that, for example, in the case of the EP elections, the European Parliament elections, there will be cracks within the right-wing groups, so that, for example, the ECR and the ID will end up in different camps in quite many votes. So the ECR will try to be a bit more moderate, a bit more centrist, in order to be able to cooperate with the EPP, and the ID will be pushed aside. So the far-right parties also have to sort of make the decision, decide whether they will try to be in policymaking, or whether they are holding to their own principle and not cooperating, and so belonging to the very far right. So interesting year ahead.
Sanna Salo, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now you've listened to Utblick Extra, a podcast from the Swedish Institute of International Affairs. And I hope you will listen to the full-length episodes of Utblick. This is just bonus materials. My name is Jonas Löwenberg. Thank you for listening.